Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Hello and welcome to the Betches Sub Podcast. I'm Sammy Fishbein.
I'm Amanda Duberman.
And for those of you who are just tuning in, the Betches Sub Podcast is your bi-weekly rundown of all the crazy shit that's happening in the news, explained by our two funniest friends.
Which is us.
Today we're talking about
Christopher Steele and Ivanka Trump.
Judaism is a nationality.
Oi.
Oi.
And Harvey Weinstein.
Let's get into it.
Betches Media presents.
I like beer. I don't know if you do.
Okay.
Do you like beer, Senator, or not?
My party is going bet crazy.
You're the pup. Alternative facts.
Oh, goodness.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
America!
That was a well-timed oi, Amanda. It's perfect.
We didn't plan it at all.
Not at all. Before we get into the episode, we have two really exciting announcements for you. Our first is that Betches Media just released its first ever scripted comedy series. It is called Under the Influence, and it is a story of social media addiction told through the intertwined stories of eight influencers, each of a different kind. We have a gaming influencer, a fashion influencer, a travel influencer, a makeup influencer, and more, all brought together by a group called Influencers Anonymous. It is really just truly so funny. It's a satire of how people are addicted to their phones and attention. Fun fact about this series is that I'm actually been doing the table reads for them. I've been reading all the scripts. I've been reviewing all the cuts. I'm really, really excited for you all to see it. You can find it on the Betches YouTube account. All you have to do is search Betches on YouTube. It's called Under the Influence. Episode one is Nikki's first day. You'll see who Nikki is. I think you're going to love her or hate her. We'll see. So it's on the Betches YouTube account. Subscribe, hit the notification bell. I know that's like a YouTube thing people say. And you'll get a new episode every week for the next 8 weeks. The first episode premiered on December 10th, and there will be a new one every week. The second thing we wanted to talk about is actually something that we really need all of your help with. We know that everyone here at The Sup is really interested in giving back and helping us to make The Sup and Betches the best thing that it could be. So we are launching a survey, and we would really, really appreciate your help with it. Here at Betches, we want to keep creating the best content for all of you. In order to do that, we need you to spill some tea about yourself and let us know what type of content you are interested in and what you want to see more of. All you have to do is go to betches.co/supsurvey. Simply fill it out and tell us what you want more of. Again, that's betches.co/supsurvey. It'll take about 10 minutes. It's super easy. You can do it on your phone. The mobile works. So just please help us out. We want to give you more of what you want, and we need you to help us out with that. So that's betches.co/supsurvey. All right, let's just get right into it. We have a big episode today.
Yes.
Amanda, what is getting you through this week in Trump's America?
Okay, so on Monday, the Inspector General's report dropped. We've been hearing about this for a long time, by the guy named Michael Horowitz. For ages, Trump and his allies have been telling us this is going to be a bombshell. This is going to tell you that, like, we were right, that the FBI was, like, sketchy in how they spied on us. They always had a political bias. Like, they were sure, they were certain this is what it would say. This is what Bill Barr said it would say. It came out, it said none of those things.
Of course, they're certain when Bill Barr is the one, like, writing it behind the scenes.
Yes.
Like with the Kremlin, the Kremlin's in his ear, and then he's in Michael Horowitz's ear, like, write this.
Right. Well, Michael Horowitz didn't listen.
Correct.
Or he had some gentle, well, actually, no, it was pretty, he said there were some serious errors in how, like, how parts of things were handled. Everyone at the FBI is like, yeah, that part of it could have been better. Like, they wrote a misleading email the second when they wanted to renew the Carter Page wiretap.
Yeah, we had spoken about that on a previous episode, that basically the person who was writing the application added their own commentary to an email, but it appeared that it was part of the original email. So it was, I think that this was, like, again, I think on the past episode we said this, we just chalked it up to, like, standard work incompetence.
Yeah.
That sometimes people are just fucking lazy at work because they want to go home.
Investigating you. Right. I think that, yeah, as I was reading that, like, I actually do think that's something that I would not do because I'm very careful about that kind of thing. And just in journalism, like, you never do anything even close to that. But yeah, I thought the same thing. But what's getting me through is that Christopher Steele, who wrote the Steele dossier, that sort of had like some very unsavory things to say about Trump, which arguably started this investigation.
The P-tape.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Those unsavory things. He apparently, it came out as part of this report that he and Ivanka Trump were friends. They were friends.
In a weird way.
Yeah.
Who makes friends with another? Like, once
it's
really
very strange.
Okay. Yeah. Explain their friendship.
So they met. They had a personal relationship. This personal word is being used like a lot. At one point, he gifted her a family tartan from Scotland.
His own family?
I think so. I don't think it was theirs. But so he's a former. It's like a seal, or it's like a blanket, right?
The blanket?
I don't know. It sounds like a blanket. It's like a
he
decorative.
Gave her a blanket.
I think it's a decorative tapestry, possibly a garment. But yeah, he gave her a blankie.
Yeah, I'm gonna look it up.
So they met in 2007. Ivanka and Trump met Steele at a dinner. They began like corresponding about possibly working together. So I guess, what's a tartan?
It's a woolen cloth woven in one of several patterns of plaid, especially of a design associated with a particular Scottish clan.
So it's like, you like hang it on your wall?
It's like a decor.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
You could hang it on your wall.
And everything. Yeah.
Put it on your couch.
Cool. It's like a snuggly version of like a family crest.
It is. That's exactly what it is.
That sounds awesome. I would love a Duberman.
A family tartan.
Family tartan. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So they met in 2007.
Morty could be like so.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Morty does have a tartan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He fits with a tartan. Bruce should have a tartan.
Totally.
Bruce is a tartan dog if you've ever seen a tartan dog.
All dogs look amazing in plaid.
They do.
Most of them do.
I love plaid.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm wearing plaid. This is my tartan.
Is that your tartan? The fishbine tartan.
Yeah. Oh.
So they met in 2007 and they just like buddied up and they were like talking back and forth about potential work. This guy was a former intelligence officer, but he was doing like freelance business intelligence. Kind of seems like the guy that's in like the show that isn't really part of any of the governments, but he's like doing all this like shady shit to help them.
Yeah.
So they met repeatedly. They met at Trump Tower once. Ivanka reportedly like might have even offered him some business with her company since he was so good at this. He told Michael Horowitz, and it says in the report that if anything, I was maybe favorably disposed to them. Because they were friends. So there was like, there was warmth there. There was no, it just,
yeah.
It's like another, I think after this report came out, Trump was like, it's even worse than I could have imagined. It's like, what did you read?
It's just weird that Ivanka never was like, oh, actually, like
I know.
Me, like we text.
I know. Like, I wonder if she did. And her dad was just like, it doesn't matter. I lie. All of these are lies.
Well, I think, okay. I don't want to be like conspiracy minded, but like I'm reading between the lines of this personal relationship and I'm hearing one of two things. I'm hearing affair or somebody wanted an affair, like, or there was like some sort of flirtation,
yeah.
If not actually, you know, a consummate affair.
Right.
Like
because if they were friends, they would say they were friends.
Amanda, how many male friends do you make just generally out in the world? I mean, I know we're both introverts. But
yeah,
how many male friends do you make that
I have
are not
never,
related to your boyfriend?
That's never happened.
Never.
It's never happened to me. I went to women's college.
Especially not like someone through work. Like, I guess you kind of make friends
colleagues. Right. The only male friends I have outside of my boyfriend's friends and my friend's boyfriends are work friends. But I would never call them my personal friends. I'd call them my work friends.
Same.
I would only call a personal friend some random person, some random dude I met out. But that's weird.
That's weird.
There we go. I see the path you took me down.
Yeah, right. It's weird. It's a weird relationship. So I'm hearing some sort of weird flirtation.
Yeah.
Or I'm hearing this man he's a spy pretty much.
Yeah.
He's someone who collects information on people. I'm hearing that people knew that the Trumps were involved in sketchy business because they have always been involved in sketchy business.
For sure.
And that this guy maybe had a personal interest in it. And was sort of befriending her or just as a way to get information when his job is to literally trade in information. So it seems to me that it would make sense that he was getting something out of this relationship because, again, no adults just become friends to.
Yeah.
Because what do they have a connection about?
Right.
He's like this. He's this like British.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's this British. Where's this tartan coming from? Scotland, then?
Oh, maybe he's Scottish.
Okay.
So British. Maybe by British, they meant for the British government.
Fair.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's this guy who has what in common with heiress Ivanka Trump, who grew up on Fifth Avenue, married into a modern Orthodox Jewish family? Where is the... Okay. All right. So...
But in case he wanted tartan. I mean, yeah, it's also like...
Also, they're good enough friends that he's getting her a family tartan?
That sounds legit.
Intimate.
That sounds intimate. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it sounds like he was trying to, like, get something out of it. He described it as a personal friend. And I wonder if he used that language because, like, in the trade, he wanted to distinguish between, like, somebody I was trying to make an asset or get information from and a person that you genuinely liked. Maybe that's the difference. But that's still weird. Probably. She is.
She is hot.
Yeah.
Can't deny it.
Yeah. So that was getting me through that whole, all of the, I mean, it's really upsetting that they're denying, that the attorney general is denying that any of that is true and is still saying that the FBI illegally spied. But
I will make it my life's interest to find out more about this friendship.
Yes.
This is the kind of thing that, this is the kind of thing that really just piques my interest. I hear it and I will never, I'm a dog with a bone. I'm never going to let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You're going to write a book on it.
You know, someone has to. But speaking of books,
what's getting you through?
Yes, the thing that is getting me through is a fascinating anecdote from a new book that's out by national security expert Peter Bergen called Trump and His Generals, The Cost of Chaos. Basically, he's a national security and counterterrorism expert, and he was basically giving details of Trump's, the way he handled the situation with North Korea and the potential threat of nuclear, you know, exchange with them.
This situation seems like it was at a time where things were heightened.
Yes. Yeah. So okay. Rachel Maddow, this was the first like 10 minutes of her show last night. And I was like literally just like in the bathroom taking off my makeup and I'm hearing it in the background. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And I texted you really late and I was like, this is my getting me through. Okay. In the book, it says at a time when there was, I guess, heightened tension between US and North Korea, maybe it was like around Rocket Man time, Trump was being shown a model of the secret North Korean facility the size of like a coffee table that one of his his advisors had made for him to show him what the North Korean regime is doing and to basically indicate like what it looks like so that he could, you know, people need to design now, I guess, coffee table size diagrams for this man to know what the fuck is going on. Okay, so he's shown this, and in addition to this diagram, he's shown a satellite image of the north of the Korean Peninsula at night. And he can see that China has lights on and South Korea has lights on, but North Korea is like totally black. So he's like, where's North Korea? He thought that was like an ocean. He didn't understand that it was dark because they don't have electricity because they live under a terrible fucking dictator who doesn't give them electricity. Okay. So then he sees Seoul. He notices Seoul, that it's like right next to the border. And he's like, why is Seoul so close to the North Korean border?
How did that happen?
It's like, why is Manhattan, New York City? Like, right. Why is this island? Why is this where you picked? It's like, I don't know.
Right.
Do you want me to give you this history book?
Yeah. We put it there yesterday. We told you.
Okay. So he basically goes, this is the part. He goes, they have to move. They have to move. Seoul has to move. And
he's like, how has no one thought of this? Yeah.
According to... Yeah, we're just gonna like navigate like somewhere else. We're gonna bring our buildings and move them over. Okay, so according to the book, he said that the author says that the officials were like unclear if he was kidding. Because like what? And but to reassure them that he wasn't kidding, Trump repeated the line, they have to move. And then he told the team that he wanted all American civilians to evacuate from South Korea.
And there are a fair amount, like expats and
so many
service. Yeah,
there's so many. Okay, so the senior official is like, that's not gonna work. Like, that's gonna be interpreted that like we're going to war, it's gonna be dangerous, it's gonna escalate things, and it would crash the South Korean stock market, which would have a ripple effect. But Trump, his response to it was, go do it, as in get the people to evacuate anyway and move, and try to move the people of Seoul, have to move. Okay,
just the Americans.
So no, I think it was both.
Oh, everybody. Like, just like evacuating.
He was basically saying the Americans have to evacuate and Seoul has to move.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We need to move. Okay. The capital.
We're moving Seoul.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Pentagon, like, thank God, was like, all right, we're just going to pretend that this didn't happen and like hope he forgets about it.
And that's what happened.
But yeah. And this is, so I know we have James Mattis. He wrote that op-ed, which went nowhere, as, you know, Trump administration tends to do, write op-eds about how concerned they are and then do nothing about it. And this was one of the directions that Mattis had ignored.
The other one, Mattis quit after he ordered to pull troops from Syria, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
The amount of
Seoul, we're just going to move
all of it. We're just going to pick it up and put it down.
Don't you? This is where I'm like, where's the 25th Amendment?
I know. 25 million people live there.
Like, the man wants to move a global capital. It's one of the biggest cities in the world. It is 25 million people. It is like so much larger than New York.
Yeah.
Imagine just having to like evacuate your whole city. Yeah,
three New Yorks.
We're going to just take it over here. Maybe Maryland has some empty space. Yeah.
And they're going to go willingly.
Yeah.
An outside nation demands the relocation of an entire population.
I am investing in roadway moving.
Yeah.
Bruce is on a roadway moving truck.
Yeah. It's funny because
he is on a roadway.
Yeah. You told me to listen to this. And so you can listen to Rachel Maddow's show on a podcast. I listen to it some mornings. And at the beginning, she was just talking about like, New York is so beautiful during Christmas. Did you catch that part? And then suddenly she's like, and then Trump wanted to move Seoul. And I was like, oh, okay, there it is. Because I was like, what was Sammy talking about? This is lovely.
That's when I went to do my makeup. I was like, all right, she's just going to talk about Christmas in New York. I'm going to like leave.
Bury the lead.
And then she starts talking about the size of all these cities. And her point was like, Seoul is so much larger than the United States. And by the way, Trump said he wanted to
New
move
York.
It.
Yeah.
All right, that's getting me through the week. We have a fucking moron leading us.
An actual moron.
All right, let's get into the main news. Our first story is something very near and dear to Amanda and myself. And it is our genius president, who thinks that you can move a world capital, has decided to sign an executive order yesterday on Wednesday to make Judaism a nationality. His stated...
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah, it's never good when you want to put Jews in a category, when you want to count them.
Yeah.
It's just like...
We're really nervous about
them,
that kind of thing. Yeah.
Categorization of Jews. Just, it's never gone well. Like, we've tried it in a bunch of countries over thousands of years.
I don't even like when somebody at a party
years.
Asks me.
At a party?
Yeah.
Depends what kind of party.
I get asked, bar mitzvah? Yeah.
It depends.
Then it's like, it's just at like a Christmas party, and someone's like, "Are you
a Jew?" Be like, "Are you here to eat our blood?" Sorry, I shouldn't be perpetuating these things, but I'm just kidding. Yeah. I myself.
So the order would apply. The order seems designed to tie anti-Semitism to anti-Israel sentiment in order to crack down specifically on anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, and BDS movements, boycott, divestment, sanctions on campuses.
Yeah, so a big thing on campus is anti-Israel protests, essentially. And the BDS movement, which stands for boycott, divest, and sanction, which basically means that any companies or
governments.
like an endowment for a college, let's say, if they are invested in Israel in any way, that people want to boycott them or take their money out of them
because of what happened after the first guy said Jews are a race.
He was not the first guy.
Oh, that's true. He definitely was not the first guy.
So many people who have that's
thanks
why
for correcting that. That's like the all of Judaism.
Literally the whole story of the people is like, you live in a country, you're safe, you're good, and then they decide, you guys are different.
Yeah.
You guys are like your own thing. We don't like that. And then it usually leads to genocide or fleeing, you know?
Right.
That's how we're here.
Yes.
We fled.
Right.
Or survived. I don't know. So this is a very worrisome thing to happen. I've been up all night about it.
Yeah.
Like Amanda said, what this really does is it ties being anti-Jewish to being anti-Israel, which is frankly also a dangerous path to
go
down.
Apparently it's something that Obama did. He just didn't sign an executive order. He just sort of gave guidance to the Department of Education. I mean, the fundamental question here is like, is any anti-Israel sentiment anti-Jewish? And that's kind of what this wants to say is yes, it ties it to like, because anti-Zionism is anti-Judaism and anti-Jewishness, and Zionism relates to Israel. And, you know, like, is it anti-Semitic to question whether Israel has a right to exist? This would say yes.
Well, I happen to think it is anti-Semitic to question whether Israel has a right to exist. I don't think it's automatically anti-Semitic to question the actions of the current Israeli government. I think that there's a big distinction here, but this wipes that out completely.
Totally. What's interesting is that they took this guidance from the International Holocaust Remembrance Agency. They have like sort of guidelines on what kind of anti-Israel, anti-Zionist stuff can also be considered anti-Semitic, and they interpret it very, very broadly. They even say, like, if someone were to say that the fact that Israel exists is itself a racist thing, that would be anti-Semitic. like if you were to call Israel, I don't know why they had the specific example of racism, but the example I read were that if you were to say that like the fact that Israel's mere existence is racism towards the Arab communities around it, that would be, according to the Holocaust Remembrance Agency, that would be an anti-Semitic statement.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there are people who believe that, but I also think there are a lot of genuinely anti-Semitic people whose hatred of Israel is the source is anti-Semitism.
But plus, those guidelines were never meant to be incorporated into something like American policy. They're just sort of out there, you know, like this is what we can, what we think could lead to something dangerous.
Right. I don't like the idea of checking a box that that I'm Jewish.
Yeah.
Also, it doesn't really make sense because just because someone, my Jewishness is not a nationality. Yeah. I'm an American. I am also Jewish. So I would like to maintain the protections that are offered under like freedom of religion.
Exactly.
I don't feel that. Well, okay. What happens about the, what about people who are British and they're Jewish? Are they, is their national,
and they live
under
here?
This standard? Yeah.
If they're on a college campus, if they are, I think what they're going after, yeah, it sort of implies that being Jew, it just, it can, there's no like, it's true. Being Jewish does not mean you are Israeli.
No.
But it sort of puts those two together.
Exactly.
In an explicit way. It doesn't say why, because I was researching this all morning. I was like, but why? What's the, how does that work? But the idea is like, if you criticize Israel, you're criticizing all Jews.
Exactly.
And therefore, the only way we can include that criticism in anti-discrimination things is if we tie Jewishness to some sort of national origin, even when that national origin is Israel. I've never been to Israel.
Well, you should go. It's your, it's your national origin, I guess.
I guess. Go home.
Go home, Amanda. I mean, I think it's incredibly dangerous. And a big reason for this is because ultimately what the effect of something like this is that it doesn't target all Jews. It targets liberal Jews who don't agree with what the administration in Israel is doing. And that's what I think is so dangerous about it, is because it actually will kind of corner those Jewish activists, or no, not even Jewish activists. It will corner specific progressive activists who tend to agree with the BDS movement.
Yeah.
And that's really what it's meant to do, which is frightening.
Right, right.
Also, yeah. I would like to ask anyone who supports this idea how they would feel if Ilhan Omar asked them to put that their nationality was Judaism.
Right.
That's the question I would like to pose.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
if Obama did this?
Yeah. They would freak out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's like, there are also real First Amendment free speech concerns with this. Like, because religion, I think the problem is that religion does not fall into the category of things protected under Title VI. And so they're like, okay, how can we work Judaism in there? And the language says discrimination against Jews may give rise to a Title VI violation when the discrimination is based on an individual's race, color, or national origin. And I guess they're just saying, like, let's say in this case, if you are Jewish, your national origin is Jewish.
Yeah.
Which is just,
I mean, I happen
strange.
To buy the idea that Judaism is a race more than I buy that it's a national a nationality.
Yeah.
I think that that would make a lot more sense, because then you could cover Jews from other places.
Right.
And it is based on your heritage, which is what I guess.
It's true. I mean, I have friends that are Latina and Latino or Hispanic, and they consider themselves white, and they're like, I don't want to, what option do I put? You know, like, why am I being othered on every form I fill out?
That's why these forms are fucking pointless.
Right. So yesterday, did you see that Jared Kushner wrote an op-ed about this yesterday afternoon?
Who wrote it for him?
Yeah, right. But he basically, of course, I'm sure he wrote it because he cited the Jersey City attack, which was anti-Semitic.
If I'm Jared Kushner's assistant, I can still cite the Jersey City attack.
Right, right. Which, there was a shooting in Jersey City, which is very close to Manhattan, that was likely, I don't know if they've confirmed this,
It was at a kosher supermarket.
And the guy had anti-Semitic.
Yeah, and there's like one kosher supermarket in Jersey City, so this was like, it didn't just, they didn't happen upon it.
At first they were like, maybe it was like a, maybe they used the word soft heart. They were like, if you're walking by and you want to, if you want to kill people, that's a place where you're probably not going to get a fight. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, this order also says that like, if there are First Amendment issues, then none of this applies. But based on this, Department of Education is already investigating alleged anti-Semitism at Rutgers, Duke, UNC, and Williams. And all of those started with criticism of Israel.
Right.
Because the BDS movement, I mean, people are very,
it's
emotional about
movement.
It. Yeah. And it by supporting it, you are support for it, like mass support of BDS would really probably threaten Israel's safety. Like if people were to divest.
Oh, absolutely.
And boycott the country, which is already, everybody knows, in a vulnerable place in the middle of the Middle East.
Yeah, they're fine.
So I think that's why it's considered anti-Semitic, because if you are wishing that, if you're wishing upon Israel to not be as safe or as prosperous, is that anti, are you anti-Jew? This is saying, I think maybe.
I think that sort of the party line amongst right-wing Jews in America has been to, they would say that anti-Israel is the new anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And maybe they say that Zionism, is true.
Yeah.
Like perhaps that is, has some truth to it, but I don't think that codifying it here in this way is appropriate, yeah. obviously. And I don't think that that criticizing Israel automatically makes you an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
Because there are plenty of Jews who criticize Israel because no government is perfect.
Yeah. It's also that like people have problems with a lot of things. People are I mean, obviously there's activism surrounding everything. I'm not accusing anti-Israel or anti-Zionist or pro-Palestinian groups from being anti-Semitic at all. But there is it's a little bit scary when there are caricatures and stereotypes associated with the people you're protesting against that are so entrenched and available to you. And of course, there are anti-Zionists on Twitter and probably in real life who play into those stereotypes and who do hate Jews.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a big enough group to justify, you know, kicking off, dissolving campus groups that are questioning Israel's policies.
Right. Like they're not dangerous. Like they're not physically hurting anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, anti-Semitism is a real problem. I happen to think it comes from both the right and the left. Mm-hmm. I do agree with that assessment. Yeah. But what concerns me is the idea that they're of categorizing us
right.
in any way.
Sam yesterday was like, I will never check a box.
I'll never check a box.
Yeah.
I mean, the information is easy to find.
Right. Yeah.
Like, but, yeah. but I will never put it on a form.
Right. I will say it anytime I'm at a microphone, but I will not.
Exactly.
Go to a microphone and tell them you are Jewish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, that's how I get my Title VI protection.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy Hanukkah, everybody. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Harvey Weinstein.
Harvey Weinstein. Now you really want to be discouraged in the, you know, the justice system.
Yeah.
Harvey Weinstein has reached a deal. Him and the board of his bankrupt film studio have reached a $25 million settlement with dozens of women who have accused him of sexual misconduct. But the deal doesn't require him to admit any wrongdoing or pay anything to his accusers out of his own pocket. Instead, the insurance companies who represented his studio will be the ones to pay.
I feel like now insurance companies should have like a Weinstein clause. If you rape several dozen women, we're not going to bail you out.
Yeah, this settlement resolves lawsuits filed by dozens of women since 2017 when the Times article came out. His accusers include stars like Gwyneth Paltrow, Angelina Jolie, Selma Hayek, but they have not joined the proceedings. I think in the proceedings you have Annabella Sciorra, Rose McGowan. And this is actually just the civil case. For anyone who is doubting that we have two justice systems in this country, one for the rich white man and one for everyone else, Harvey Weinstein still has a criminal trial next year on charges of sexual assault, including two women. And on Wednesday, a judge raised Mr. Weinstein's bail to $5 million after prosecutors accused him of mishandling his ankle monitor. It was previously $1 million. Well, this seems to, you know, I'm sure he doesn't have it, you know. Yeah, and he is having back surgery.
Yeah, he walked in because he had to go back presumably to post that bail. And he like, what's with all, he was in a walker and he was like very like, oh
I feel so
what's
bad
with
for
all
him.
Of these dudes like Cosby and Manafort and Weinstein? They go to jail and then they're like, oh, I'm just a sad old man. Why even bother punishing me?
Because they are a sad old man.
That's
now.
True.
Yeah.
They just wither away.
They do.
Yeah, I mean, the only man that has actually been held accountable is Bill Cosby, who is not white and also was accused by like 80 people. And is serving time for one, but
it's insane.
Yeah,
it's insane what someone can get away with when they just have like a little money.
Right. I know. Not even his money. You just have to like, and it's like bankruptcy insurance. I'm like, why can't I just start a bankrupt business? And it seems like everything ends up fine.
Right. I know.
Protected against all the money you
only
lost.
If you are rich and white, does any of this work for you? For everyone else,
yeah.
You are in jail for life. You never see your kids again.
Yeah, should we do an
itty bitty? America.
Should we do a little impeachment update?
A little impeachment, yeah.
So on Tuesday, articles of impeachment were announced. abuse of power, obstruction of justice. They didn't do any tied to the Mueller investigation because moderates are vulnerable in some states. And we know that people that support impeachment really just support it for the Ukraine stuff because it's pretty explicit. On the same day, Congress moved to impeach the president for his shady activity that might have left Ukraine vulnerable and, like, defenseless against Russia and undermined the entire global position on Russia. Trump hosted Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov at the White House.
Again.
Nobody really knows what happened at this meeting. First, Trump tweeted and the White House said, like, yeah, we did bring up election meddling. We gave him a warning. Then Lavrov was like, no, we didn't. And then Lavrov was like, okay, we did talk about it. We talked about what me and Pompeo had talked about. So earlier, Lavrov and Mike Pompeo had this, like, weird exchange where it was literally just a, like, 20 minutes of, like, Pompeo being like, so Russia meddled in the election, and Lavrov being like, no.
Good for Pompeo.
And he's like, no, they did. We know this for a fact. No, we didn't. Nobody knows that for a fact. And so then the conclusion was like, well, we talked about what me and Mike Pompeo talked about, which is very different from, he issued me a warning not to meddle in their next election. But
I mean, we obviously know that Trump is welcoming.
Yeah.
Trump is on their side. Like,
yeah. Trump, all roads lead to Putin.
We are. He wants to be with them.
Yeah.
They are like minded.
Right.
He doesn't have anything in common with.
Did you see the picture?
Macron.
Beaming.
From years ago or from this time?
I don't know which one it was.
The one from last year or 2 years ago, he's never smiled bigger.
It was that one then. Unless he did it again.
Like, yeah. White, yeah. Excited.
Well, did you see the tweet? And you made this joke. It was like, okay, talk into the pen, Mr. Trump. A little louder.
Honestly, Lavrov was changing the batteries and all the bugs. That's what he was doing behind the desk.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, these are getting a little quiet.
So wild. And then the House panel is setting to vote on impeachment today. They had, debate last night, but it was just more people saying their own thing. I started to watch and then I wasn't that moved.
It was a lot of yelling.
I think it was because if you've been watching this all the time, like we have, I think this is designed for like the primetime audience, which I don't think was very engaging for them.
It was so late.
But,
hearings are a daytime activity.
Yeah. Yeah. So the president is considering, did you see this, hiring for his defense, Alan Dershowitz?
Yeah.
Bringing it back.
Accused
who was
pedophile.
Epstein's lawyer and accused is also pedophile. Accused of assaulting the women.
Yeah.
And is the guy who was like, well, I can't a 16-year-old consent to sex.
Oh, yeah. Right. He's like so
this
gross.
Monster.
And he gets grosser and grosser.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. So what's happening next in impeachment?
Sorry. I thought we were done. So if the House impeaches Trump, which it's widely believed to do so, there are some Democrats that want to do a censure. But I think they're just saying that so they can tell their constituents, we're in New York, like every Democrat I know is dying for impeachment and has been for a long time since November 2016, according to Republicans. But I think
he's a criminal then too.
Right. Largely just for appearances. And then shortly, as soon as next week, the House might impeach him. And impeachment, we've said this before, he's not removed. It goes to the Senate for a trial. And that will probably happen in January. But I've been hearing that Trump wants to make it like a circus, like a big, wild defense of him. Whereas McConnell, is a dickhead, but wants to maintain some decorum. So I think there's going to be, some tension there between, Trump wanting to put on a show and Mitch McConnell just wanting to, get all this done.
I don't believe that Mitch McConnell doesn't want it to be a circus. He's just saying that. Here's what I predict.
He doesn't want to get back to work. He's not doing anything.
Well, they also passed USMCA in the House the same day they dropped the impeachment articles and Lavrov came. Big day.
Yeah.
So I think that and McConnell says he refuses to take up USMCA in the Senate until later. So I think that his whole strategy is the following. They're going to obviously acquit him in the Senate because and then They're gonna use the Senate trial to basically advance this Ukraine help the Democrats theory. Then he's gonna pass USMCA, giving him this victory that is the greatest thing ever. It's so good for our economy. It's gonna be great. Then they have Barr has this report called the Durham Report, which you might start hearing about all the fucking time. Where basically they're going to say that Ukraine meddled to help the Democrats and Obama was spying on Trump's campaign, and that's what is anticipated to be found in the Durham report, which is going to come out in the summer. And then we're leading up to the election.
Right.
So I think they have a very strong strategy, the Republicans. And I don't see that the Democrats have really any plan to combat it. I feel like the road ends here for Democrats. I don't really get what they're supposed to do, honestly.
Yeah.
Do you have any ideas? No.
No.
No ideas in the studio.
And we were talking about how, like, if he gets reelected, like, he's going to be impeached again.
He's going to become a dictator if he gets reelected. Yeah.
Speaking of that, let's move
on
to the...
Unless some had health issues.
Yeah. Speaking of that, let's move on to the election section. The Democrats are really starting to come for each other now. And we don't like
it.
Yeah.
I do not have the stomach for this.
There's an especially pronounced Warren Buttigieg feud that's been going on. Both sort of mutual calls for transparency. Buttigieg demanding that she release how much money she made when she was a corporate lawyer. I thought she had already done that, and her campaign was like, we just updated it with that she had made about $2 million over 30 years representing corporate clients. Why not?
That's not that much. That's
what are you doing, Liz? I thought she was charging like lawyers 700. It's a ton of money. I would love to have that after 30 years, but I guess, I don't know, maybe that just referred to like specific clients that people consider corporate and scary.
Right.
But
maybe. And it's like $60,000 a year for to be a lawyer.
Right. I guess that's while she was, that was not her main job.
Yeah.
So like she made $60,000 a year from her side hustle. I will give her that. She's not a poor woman.
To me, it sounds
like none of these candidates are.
She's not poor, but she's also not like corruptly rich.
Right, right. I mean, somebody should ask her, like, would your tax hikes apply to you? And they probably would. I think hers apply to everybody, pretty much. But everybody wanted Buttigieg to release his McKinsey clients. McKinsey is a consulting firm that he worked for, I think, right after college or grad school.
Yeah, it's considered one of the best consulting firms. Now they actually work for ICE, I believe.
Right. That's why this came up. Yeah, because people were like, what did you do there?
But here's the thing. The fact that Pete Buttigieg like got this job at this great firm after college to me speaks to his competence, and the fact that I believe this about both Liz and him. The fact that these things are being brought up is so unfair to them, because like we're applying these standards of today, this like that you have to be this like pure person who's like never made a dime and like never ever like touched a rich person before. like it's just sort of like this bullshit. Like it's bullshit because like these are legitimate careers that these people had and we should be lauding them for their competence and the fact that they haven't been running a crime syndicate since they were four. Like Trump, who got like $400,000 by the time he was three or something.
Yeah, people are kind of getting on Pete because, like, he worked at McKinsey. One of his clients is Blue Cross Blue Shield in Michigan. And he was working there a couple years before they laid off, like, a lot of people and cut their benefits and, like, raised rates. And he has said, like, the nature of how he described what he did sounds like he could have been part. I mean, that's what consultants do. They help you cut costs. And I was there 2 years earlier, but I could have, like, I don't know what happened then. But it sounds like the work he did might have contributed to those decisions. But, like...
No one uses up in a the consultant air. So that they can lose money.
Right. Yeah.
It's like that's just what a consultant is for. And also sometimes companies, they need to do layoffs.
Yeah.
Obviously, look, we're obviously anti raising health insurance premiums here at this podcast. But like we're literally going to dirty this guy up who might end up being the nominee.
He's still surging.
Because he's not like. Pure and perfect. Like, I'm sorry, do you want like a baby out of the womb who's never done anything to be your candidate?
Right.
Because they've never done anything wrong. Like, what is this standard that we've created for ourselves that is literally fucking us up so hard because we're just going to keep ruining each other until we get to the
election.
And
there's going to be no enthusiasm for the candidate that we have.
To be honest, it has killed my enthusiasm for every candidate. Yeah. All of these things that I'm like, okay, maybe I'll run.
Yeah. I've always been like very like averse to like idol worship, especially because like everybody has something like this. Everybody has something that makes them not look perfect.
Right. Exactly.
That like if Obama were running now, he could be canceled for something.
He would be canceled for something. He would be canceled for saying that we should stop canceling people.
Right. We couldn't even cancel Harvey Weinstein.
Exactly. It's like, I think it's
at least tweeted he originated cancel culture and he's not canceled yet.
Who did?
Harvey Weinstein. I feel like that's when.
Oh, good point. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He's kind of the first one. So now people are calling Buttigieg Wall Street Pete. They're accusing him of favoring insurance companies. It's like, first of all, I don't know what Pete Buttigieg believes. I don't even think Pete Buttigieg knows because he's aware that nothing that he says now means anything because even if he were elected, it doesn't, it's not like you automatically get everything you want the day you get elected. Like, you have to work with people, so the ultimate policy that you come up with is not like, is not going to be the policy that you promise.
Right. Of course. Right.
Like, I'd love to see Elizabeth Warren pass her wealth tax and her Medicare for all on day one. That's absolutely not happening. Right. Like, it's just, so like, you can be like, oh, she's so great because this is her policy. It's like, okay, but we have to worry about the fact that we either have to elect a Democrat or have a fascist dictator.
Right. Yeah. I remember reading like the New York Times article about the breakdown of Kamala's campaign. It sort of sounded like towards the end, she just didn't even really know what position. She's like, she wanted to maybe start talking more about her prosecutorial record and not just being like, those were my subordinates. I didn't really know. She wanted to like engage with it more, but the internet was so like, Kamala's a cop, which, and certainly absolutely legitimate criticisms there that I thought she should have engaged with more. But like, she was so terrified. She was like, I am not allowed to do anything.
And Kamala's a great candidate, talented politician.
She would have had such a good chance against him.
And it's again, it's like, no one is perfect. No one has ever done everything perfectly that pleases everybody. It's just ridiculous, I think, to think that like someone, Elizabeth Warren, who's 70 years old, who has had 50 years of working, that every single thing she's ever done is going to be pure and ideologically aligned with exactly how she thinks now, with exactly the temperature of the country and where the Democratic Party is. It's just sort of absurd to expect this of people and then to dirty them up in the process when they're going to then have to face Donald Trump, who no one is dirt. There's no one dirtier than him.
Right.
So like, why are we acting like we're so, oh, you're so bad because you like made some money?
It's like right.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
All right, shall we move on to one more thing?
Let's do it.
We have a special one more thing today. We're bringing in a guest.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. Homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
Okay, so our one more thing today, we have a guest with us, Mackenzie Green.
Hello, hello.
She was Miss DC USA in 2010. We wanted to talk to Mackenzie because...
And she works at Betches. She's not just a brand. No.
I'm at that Venn diagram of people who were in a pageant and work at Betches. And it's just a circle with me in the middle.
Yeah. The only person in it.
Yeah. Yeah, surprisingly. For the first time in...
Life takes you weird places, right?
Oh, yeah.
For the first time in history, Miss America, Miss USA, Miss Teen USA, and Miss Universe are all black women for the first time ever. Which is, it was a pretty striking image to see Monday morning, I think, or Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
And couldn't help but think there's definitely like an impact here. And it seems like something that is pretty meaningful. And so what does this mean for, what would this have meant to you? And what do you think about what's happening?
So a lot of times people ask me how in the world I got into a pageant in the first place. And I always point to this time, Shantae Hinton, who was Miss DC USA at the time, who won Miss USA. The year she competed, the top five were all women of color. They were all black women. And I remember sitting in my grandmother's house, watching it with my mom. We would watch the pageant every year. And I looked on that screen and I saw five women that looked like me. And that was the first time in my life I had ever put together this idea that girls that look like me can do a thing like that. And so years later, when I got to meet Shantae and she was actually the MC the year I competed, my final question was, who are former Miss DCs that inspire you? And so I told the story about Shantae, and it was very strange. And I remember then winning and going to a school in Southeast DC, which anybody who knows DC knows that that's a fairly impoverished crime area that is largely filled with Black and brown people. And I remember this little girl ran up and she goes, "Are you a princess?
Oh, wow.
Can I be a princess like you when I grow up?" And I thought, okay. All right. I know what Shantae meant to me, but this is what this means to this little girl. And I think watching Sunday night, and I was fully aware, and for anybody that's wondering, yes, past queens are on a group chat with each other. I'm on a group chat with my 2010 sisters, with my Miss DC sisters.
What do you talk about?
I cannot tell you, but we talk about everything. Like it gets real messy.
What's like one thing?
Ooh, I would say one thing is we talk about the shade other people throw at us on our own Instagram. So like we have a past title holder in the Miss DC family who is a former military, and people take it upon themselves to write, you know, interesting things in her comment section. And so we go as an army of like 30-something sisters that just like attack this one person.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh my God, yeah. They're like a pageant bot farm.
Yeah. Basically.
But for good.
Basically. Yeah. But yeah. It was just wild in that moment of watching. And I know when I competed, there's that moment where you're watching the other title holders winning and you're counting your head like, okay, there's already five Black girls in this group, all right, I don't know if they're going to take a sixth one, or, oh, crap, they already crowned a Black girl last year. Maybe one won't win again this year. Well, at least I'm going and I'm getting a shot. And I think in that moment, looking and seeing all four major titles, I thought, this is happening.
Yeah.
This is real. Like, I think we all were, like, kind of in shock. Like, one of the girls just goes, is this real? And I was like, yeah, I think this is actually happening. And for anybody that's ever looked, Miss DC is known for crowning Black title holders, and we actually get a lot of, you know, I don't know if I can curse, but we get a lot of shit for it. Okay, we get a lot of shit for the fact that we have consistently sent Black women, I think in the last 20 years we've only had like two white title holders. Shout out to Jessica, she's my sister, Kappa sister, and DC sister. But it was just this wild moment where it was like, it sunk in for me that all of us that came before and all those that will come didn't do this in vain. And it was that feeling of like this pride that I'm a part of this family that has shown progress, that now when people look, it won't be this like, oh, you did pageants, so what does that really mean? It's like, yeah, I did a pageant and look what that means.
Yeah. It seems like the pageants is this pageant is the opposite of the Democratic debate stage.
Yeah. Oh, 1,000,000%.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like all white guys.
Yeah.
And Andrew Yang.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you think pageants, or the, like in particular Miss DC, has become so much more diverse than like anything else?
Yeah.
Like even like the Golden Globe nominations, like it's all white men.
Oh yeah.
Why have pageants been able to kind of like buck this trend?
Oh, believe me, I still can't figure out why Queen and Slim hasn't been nominated for anything so far this award season. I'm like, all right, I know why there's no nice white person in it. But I think we have been able to get past this trend, I think, one, because if you looked at the judging panel, it was women, and it was largely women of color. And I think that we look for our reflection in the world that's around us. Somebody said something interesting to me recently. They were like, when my sister wanted a pug dog, she kept sending me pictures of pugs all the time. And then next thing I knew, when I went on the street, I started seeing pugs everywhere. And I think like that is the best way I can explain representation, and particularly like pageantry. If you don't see yourself up there, you just are like, what's the point of this thing? I don't see any point. But when you start to like be reminded that like your Black is beautiful, Black girl magic is a real thing, next thing you know, you look up and you're like, oh my God, I've never noticed that Beyonce is on the cover of this magazine with braids in. Oh, did you notice that Miss South Africa just won Miss Universe? Oh crap, did you know that, you know, Michelle Obama is doing XYZ? Like you start to see your magic elsewhere. And I think because DC, you know, better known as Chocolate City, is a reflection of its people, I think at the end of the day, our particular pageant has largely gotten Black women, because no surprise, there are beautiful Black women that exist in the world. And I think they all kind of drop into DC, and it seems to be this shock sometimes. People are like, wow, well, I guess there's just nothing but beautiful Black girls in DC. I'm like, well, you'd be surprised. They're in Oklahoma and Utah and Hawaii and South Africa.
And okay, everywhere.
Yeah, like, I mean, even looking and seeing, I think it was Miss Ireland. Was a biracial woman of color. And I was like, just mind blown.
Totally don't even think of that.
Yeah, yeah. There's black people in Ireland, y'all. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, you what, said...
Go, go ahead.
You were saying that there was like a degree of tokenism before. Like, well, there's already a black girl here, so there's not going to be another one. And do these wins also sort of... I'm sure there are also shitty white women that rely on that too. They're like, well, I didn't win this one because they had to have a black woman there. And now it's clearly a meritocracy. Like, whoa, they had to have all of them be black women? You think they had to? Do you think it takes the weight out of any out of people chalking it up to tokenism now?
I think, and it's wild because we had this win, and like I said earlier, when Jessica won, she won like 2-3 years after myself. And she was the first white woman to have won it in a while. Mm-hmm. And I remember people acted like, finally, we're dismantling racism. And I was like, I don't know if that's been our problem.
I feel like the smallest amount of like.
And I remember even like Jessica saying like, oh, please don't put this on me. I don't want to be like.
Right. She's like white hero.
Like, yeah, she's like, please don't turn me into like the reverse Rosa Parks of like pageantry.
I'm just here for a scholarship. Please.
She was like, I just wanted to represent my city that I'm living in. Like, what is happening? And it just like blew my mind. But I do think there is that moment of weight on your shoulders. Like, I remember going to Miss USA and thinking, all right, don't get out here. Make sure you put a, you know, a G at the end of every word, that you yes, sir, no, sir, that you look people in the eye, that you're polite, that you're put together, because you come down that escalator one day not looking put together and you can see the look in, you know, a producer's face or in the person at the time. You know, also it might have had something to do with the person that owned it. But just a man. I can't remember his name. Some Donnie something. I don't know. But
we can talk about that another time. Yeah, that's another episode.
Oh, that's a whole other episode. Whenever Mackenzie has nothing to lose, she will tell us amazing stories.
But it was like you would see that look when you were a little off kilter, or it was like that conversation backstage.
But you weren't off kilter or not put together. Yeah. The standards for black women are just
was so high. And it was like that moment where you're just like, you're all looking at each other like, my head's so itchy. I have like 14 pounds of weave on because I got to have straight hair. And if I don't have straight hair, it's going to suck. And it's like to see that girl standing up there with like a dope ass fade, natural hair. And I was like, that is my niece. That's my niece right there. That is my niece Zora in full effect. Beautiful brown skin, beautiful 4C curls, living her best life. I mean, the woman said she listened to Beyonce's Brown Skin Girl that morning. Amazing. It's like, it doesn't get much blacker than that, honestly.
Well, Amanda mentioned tokenism. How do you feel that an organization like Pageantry made a transition from tokenism to like genuine diversity?
Yeah, I think, and I'll say this, I love to, you know, from whence I came, I do think we have more to go. You know, I look forward to the day we have, you know, a woman who's the, you know, a dreamer who's standing up there telling her story, or a trans woman one day. But I do think we've made these leaps and bounds because I think people have gotten out of this kind of like Eurocentric idea of beauty. It was like, I was just looking recently and I realized Sarah Bartman, for anybody that doesn't know, that was the Hottentot Venus. She was a black woman from South Africa that had a quote-unquote exotic savage body, and she was chopped up in pieces, and her body was put on display and was toured around the world. And she was from... Yeah.
Oh, my God.
What?
Yeah, get ready, people. About to blow your mind. And this woman, this is about 200 years ago. Yeah. So for anybody that's But I'm saying the idea that, like, I think people go like, oh, that was so long ago. And it's like, well, no. Yeah. Think about how old the country is. Think about how old, you know, how long ago different moments are that we talk about, whether it's, you know...
Wait, explain to me. Wait. Go back.
Yep.
Chopped up in...
Literal pieces put on display.
Where?
I know she was put at the Victoria and Albert Museum in London.
Why?
That's what I was thinking as you're saying that. It's like we love to think of history as being like Victorian novels. It's like that that I have an affinity with that history. It's like, oh, that was too long ago. 200 years is nothing. Like,
like 200
like
years
Pride
is like
and Prejudice.
Yeah, it's like people are still like talking about you know, like D-Day.
Why would they do that?
A big ass. She had big breasts. She had large lips. She had black skin. You know, I mean, it's
so. Why wouldn't they keep it as one
no?
Thing?
They thought it was strange when you know. And I mean, I could talk all day about the, you know, the commoditization of black and brown bodies for, you know, people's consumption. But, and for anybody that's wondering, that is actually what Kim Kardashian's Paper magazine cover was based off of, was an old picture of the Hottentot Venus.
Oh.
That's beside the point.
Really?
I didn't know
yes.
that.
The champagne image is based off of that woman, which it's like,
why didn't anyone talk about that at the time?
I think they did.
They did, but don't nobody listen to us over on.
It was a little bit before, like, I think it was pre
It was everybody deciding to be woke and being like, let me learn. Fair. Right. But fair. I think to
so
me,
there's lots to learn.
That idea of tokenism, it blew my mind to think like there's a 200-year gap between this South African woman and this South African woman. That like we have come from a woman being put on display as though she were an animal, a taxidermy animal, to this woman standing on stage talking about, I am here for women that look like me. And for anybody out there that's like, why do we have to talk about all them being black and blah, blah, blah? Like, the world would be better when we don't see color.
That's not possible.
Yeah, that's not. And also, that's not helpful to me. That's not helpful to me as a woman of color. That's not helpful to your friend who's a person of color. I hope you have a friend that's a person of color. But I heard Melanie Hobson say something great once where she said, I don't need you to be color blind. I need you to be color brave. I need people to stop being like, well, we'll have a better world when we don't have to talk about four black women. No, no, no. We will have a better world when you can acknowledge the fact that, like, wow, it's really fucked up that we have just now gotten to four women of color being the title holder.
Right. Yeah. And that's only in pageantry. This is not to say that this has, like, pervaded, like, anything
else. And I think it should scare people because people love to look down their nose at pageant girls and be like, oh, God, they're so vain. They think, and it's like, no, no. We've had more black women be in charge of that title than we have sit in the White House, and that should concern you.
Well, it's like all women in the fucking White
House. I mean, look at that whole conversation when, you know, Joe Biden was saying, like, the woman of color. Yeah, it's the fact that he
forgot.
Kamala Harris could say there are two, not there are 20.
Right. Two is low.
No, the fact that it's two is how she could be like, no, I'm the other one right here. Right. It's like, no, it should have been like.
Yeah. Also that it took 200 years to get to this, and we're not even like that far along, I would say.
Well, it's always this wild, and I'm taking like a bit of a segue, but it's always this wild thing. Like, I sit in classrooms. I used to sit in class, and people would be like, "Oh, the civil rights movement was so long ago."
No,
and I would always say, "No, my father was a member of the Little Rock Nine. My father, not my great grandfather, not my great great grandfather. I mean, my daddy at my house right now that I just texted to send me money in college, was alongside Dr. King and Daisy Bates and was breaking barriers, and people were hanging his body, hanging him in effigy outside of his own school." And it's like, so don't pat yourself on the back.
Yeah. Right.
Don't be like, we're so far away from this. No. In my lifetime.
What about the idea that I think that a lot of people felt that, like, when Obama got elected, we like saw racism.
Oh yeah,
racism.
We saw racism. Oh yeah. People love to tell themselves that, like, whenever it's like, oh my God, look, Darius Rucker sings country music. We've moved past racism in the music. I'm like, no.
It's like, no, just because you have like one, you know, a few things that you can point to, like, great, those are good things. We don't not want them to happen.
Right.
But it's like it's really not like it's good. It's just not like amazing.
It's progress. Not there yet. Yeah, it's progress. And I think like I can equate it to like if you were trying to lose weight and you lost a pound, you wouldn't be like, yeah, son,
done.
Killed it. Yeah. Done forever. Never coming back here. Somebody get me a donut.
Right. It's like,
it's like you have to be like, oh, wow, what did I do right?
And the work
How did we get
that one.
Yes.
And it's interesting that you point out the someone get me a donut, because if you want to use a weight loss analogy, I can analogize anything to weight loss. Just because you lost the pound doesn't mean that you can't go back.
It'll come back.
Now you have no taste for donuts.
And I think we've seen that with Obama getting elected. And then I think that that's just unleashed like all the latent racism.
And but it was always wild to me when people were like, we fixed it. And it was just this funny thing. And I think for black and brown people, we sat there like it's that Chris Rock sketch on SNL. After the election, when they were like, well, of course, Kentucky went to Trump. That's where all the racists live. And he's like, oh, word?
Yeah.
All the racists? You know, I think like as a person of color, I sat there like when people are like, we fixed it. Obama's the president. And I was like, cool. So
the president is a racist from Manhattan.
Like it was exactly. It's like when people are like, I can't possibly be racist. I am from above the Mason-Dixon line. Yeah. And I'm like, nah, son, you realize we had to like go to Rochester, get on boats, and then get up to Canada. Or like when somebody would be like, we fixed it. And I'm like, okay, so your birthday party. How many black people were there? And they're like, I don't see color. I'm like, well, guess what, homegirl?
I have one black friend. She's very eloquent.
Yeah, I'm like, guess what, homegirl? You need to look around your birthday party and be like, oh, shit, I need to reassess my my life choices because I don't know. Or like if I say to somebody, like, have you ever read, when they're like, I'm very well read, like, you know, the usual Manhattanite who's like, oh, I've read every great author. And I'm like, oh, wow, you know, Toni Morrison passed. Have you ever read a Toni Morrison? And they're like, I've never.
In high school.
Or they're like, I've never had the opportunity to pick up one of her books. I'm like, oh, wow, really?
Really?
You can get you can get books on Amazon?
And they're like, oh, what has she written? I'm like, oh, what has she I'm sorry. I know everything about your stuff.
Yes,
I know everything about like a Jack Kerouac book. I know I'm supposed to have read Leaves of Grass. I know I'm supposed to have read, you know, Charlotte Bronte till my face falls off. But I ask you about a James Baldwin book and you're like, who? Is he new? Was he on the New York Times bestsellers list? It's like the same thing with pageants. Yeah. It's like somebody will be like, I've never paid attention to a pageant. I'm like, you should. It's wild. Right. You should look up there and see an Israeli woman having, you know, lunch with a woman from China who's talking with a woman from the DR, or a girl who's like never met somebody from Myanmar. Right. It's like, that's the thing that I'm like, you're judging me for doing this event, but I have a friend in every single state in this country that I can ask about her experiences and ask her how we got to this point and ask her, you know, hey, what's going on with your family in Oklahoma? What's happening with you in South Dakota? You know, what's going on with you in North Dakota? What what's all this, you know, the issues with with Standing Rock doing to your life? Hey, how's everything going in Flint with the people you're working with? It's like, so you can stand on your high horse and look down your nose at me all you want, but one of us decided to actually go out and diversify our experiences of the world and grow our empathy. The other one is like, I would never dignify walking across the stage in a swimsuit.
I saw Miss Congeniality.
Yeah, it's like, all right, cool, cool.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, Mackenzie.
No problem.
This is great.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
I want you to come back. We can talk about some other pageant shit. But like, I think there's even more interesting things we could talk about. Like, your father's experience is super interesting.
I feel like it's Mackenzie's Black Minutes for no reason around here. You know, I just love scaring everyone.
Want to sell that segment?
Yeah, you know, basically. I'll just do that for you.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Yeah, instead of scaring all the coworkers, I'll just do it on a microphone.
All right. Well, this has been an incredible episode. I'm so happy we got to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time to walk from your desk to here.
No problem.
All right. Until then, democracy. I'm Sammy Fishbein.
I'm Amanda Duberman.
And this has been the Betches Up Podcast.
Betches.